Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a surfing California guy who started a company while sitting on his futon and grew it into a property management company that manages over 25,000 units, you are going to want to hear what Ryan Wehner has to say. Ryan is a guy that trusts his gut, and then he takes consistent action. Before we jump into the intro, it was only 3 years ago when I started to invest in multifamily syndications. I didn't know how it worked, and I didn't know how to get involved. Now I know, and I want to share some of my tips on how to get started with you. If you go to my website at darrenbatchelder.com, I have a free PDF for you. It's my five-step process for passively investing in real estate. Check it out, and I hope it helps. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Ryan Wehner before we start the show. Ryan is married, has three sons, ages 6 to 10, and lives in the DFW area. He's originally from California and grew up with an entrepreneurial dad who taught him a great lesson that you either pay now and play later or play now and pay later. Ryan chose to sacrifice and pay early in his career and was rewarded handsomely for doing so. Now, onto the show. Hello, everyone. We've got a special guest here today. We've got Ryan Wehner from Wehner Multifamily. Ryan, appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thank you for inviting me, Darren. I really appreciate it. I've greatly enjoyed your other podcasts. So,
well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Just a little background on how I know Ryan before we get into everything. So actually, this is the first time that Ryan and I have had a personal conversation together. But Ryan started the property management company that I used on my first syndication at Wehner Multifamily. And they manage over 25,000 units. And I've been very pleased with the partnership of working with them. So I'm very excited to hear his perspective. And I think that compared to, you know, all the prior guests that we've had on the show have been more focused on actually the syndicators. This is, you know, property management company owner, and he's going to be coming at it from a different angle, which I think will give everybody a great perspective on running these deals. So Ryan, appreciate you coming on. If you could just start by high level on Wehner Multifamily, and I don't know, are you an investor in any multifamily deals also, or do you?
Yeah.
So if you could share a little bit about that.
Sure. So Wehner Multifamily is a third party property management company. Our assets are in that we do third-party management are in Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. We're limited to Little Rock in Arkansas, but we have I think we have about 17, 18,000 units in DFW. Let's call it 3,000 units in San Antonio. And then we have about 1,000 units in Austin. Soon we'll have about 1,400 units in Houston. And then we have a pretty large presence in Oklahoma City. Wehner Multifamily was started around 2007, 2008. I like to tell people that it started on a futon with a laptop. I started from the ground up. I was the first employee.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And so, you know.
Where were you living?
So I lived in, I live in Dallas, and that's when I moved
that's
to Dallas
started,
in
okay.
2006. I grew up in Southern California.
That makes sense because I see a lot of pictures and I'm like, this guy looks like a surfer dude guy. Like, you know, he's just laid back and he built this huge company. So it does not surprise me that you're from California.
Yeah, so I grew up in Seal Beach, which is in Orange County. It's just south of Long Beach. And I went to UC Santa Barbara, graduated in 2000 with business economics. After the five-year vacation slash party, been pretty much a 20-year sprint. So I got when I got out of college, I worked in finance as a financial analyst for a company that raised money for media and technology companies in the middle size range. And then a couple of years out of college, I worked for a land development company called Lennar Land. And I worked for KF Nani in their land development section. You know, during this period, as soon as I graduated college, you know, within 6 months, I was making six figures in the financial industry. And but what I did was I lived in a trailer in an industrial park.
Did you really?
Saved all my money, saved every last penny I could. My friends made fun of me. And I bought duplexes and condos and stuff in Southern California. And a lot of people may not know the history of real estate in Southern California, but if you bought around 2000, 2001, 2003, even up to about 2005, everything was just going way up in value. And so I did very well on the, you know, I basically financed as much as I could. And then I was at the duplex. It's kind of a little bit of a funny story. So I was at the duplex doing having a make ready done. And the cleaning lady was coming in and she knew me pretty well. And her name was Rosa. And she was like, Mr. Ryan. She was so excited that she was buying a house. She knew I was very interested in real estate. And then she proceeded to tell me she was getting a $470,000 stated income loan.
Oh, wow.
So this was about the third quarter of 2005. So, you know, I thought, well, I've had a lucky run. My whole net worth is tied up in this kind of lucky upswing in California real estate. And this doesn't smell right. I feel like the sky's about to fall. So literally when I left that apartment, I mean, I'm paying her $75 or $85 a unit to clean an apartment. So as soon as I left, I called a friend of mine that was a broker and basically decided, hey, let's coordinate this within the next couple of weeks. I want to list everything. I want to sell everything. And, you know, a lot of people there thought I was crazy.
Right.
How could you sell now? And that's usually the best time to sell is when right. You're saying, why are you selling now?
Yep.
So I started looking across the United States where I wanted to do an exchange. And, you know, I kind of did some research and I liked DFW and I liked Atlanta primarily because they were, you know, both Fortune 500 friendly. They had two of the largest airports. And at that time in the end of 2005, it kind of rolled into probably 2006, seven, they were relative to the rest of the United States. They had pretty depressed real estate pricing, especially with regards to commercial real estate. So I thought that would be a good place for me to exchange my property into. So I quit my job and I came out here. And I mean, that's the example of me living on a futon with a laptop and just started pounding the pavement looking for deals. And I did found two deals off market. And literally this was after 3 or 4 months and hundreds of phone calls and driving everywhere. And one of the deals ended up being a grand slam. I still own it today. One was a solid double. I sold that about 8-9 years ago. And so I just 1031 my money in. A few of my brothers co-invested with me with the idea that I thought I would just, you know, get it set up, have a third party property management company manage it. And then I'd go to Costa Rica and surf. And I was thinking of starting.
Do you actually surf?
Yeah. I grew up right on the beach. Beautiful. Not a lot in the last 10 years, candidly, because it's, you know, obviously I'm pretty landlocked, but So the idea was to do that and then leave and go surf and start a propane distribution company or something down there. Best laid plans. It didn't quite work out that way. I ended up meeting my wife at Holy Trinity Catholic Church. And then, I had issues with my third party property management company. The company no longer exists. And so I kind of undiplomatically fired the management company. I wouldn't have done it the same way today, but a lot of F-bombs and all that stuff. And so I ended up just taking it over myself. I just figured, well, it's, I have time for this. And it's basically running a small business. So I kind of got my hands dirty. I tripped on myself a lot, but, where there's a will, there's a way. And both of the properties did very well. During this period, I decided that I would stay a little bit more long-term in Dallas. And so I started to, I got my broker's license, started to represent buyers out of Southern California and South Florida mainly. And so I would go and screen deals and, look all day long for deals. And, I was doing about 5 or 6 deals a year. And the way I kind of got pulled into property management, kicking and screaming. So, in fact, the first few assignments, the company wasn't even set up. So it was end of 2006 and 2007. I don't think I legally incorporated till the beginning of 2008. But, they'd come out, we'd look at several different deals. They said, hey, we like this deal, but we've heard so many horror stories from, everywhere that we really are going to mandate that you manage it if we go ahead and do this. So I got kind of pulled into the business kicking and screaming. But as the business started to progress, I found some good team members to oversee a lot of the not fun part of the business. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. My father was one of the largest contractors. He's a high school dropout, but turned into one of the top 5 contractors in the late 80s, early 90s in California. So I know how to run a business just by witnessing it, my entire childhood. And during summers, I had to drive around with my dad to all the different job sites and stuff. So I just kind of got an intuition for that. And same type of employee base in property management as construction in many ways. And so, that business just started to, build upon itself. It wasn't marketed. I mean, I really didn't do marketing up till a couple of years ago. It was just all word of mouth and building the best mousetrap and getting the best personnel on site and at our headquarters. And so 2008-09 happened, the Lehman crash, the market collapse. It became, very difficult, especially to somebody who was only representing buyers and relatively new to the game, to continue brokering deals and, making a living with it. So I really just kind of doubled my efforts in the property management space. And, that was, we doubled every year through that downturn. It was, we would take certain properties that now we wouldn't take that are in more dangerous neighborhoods that we wouldn't actually take now, but we took a lot of foreclosures and REOs. We had not a technical partnership, but we were kind of the go-to for City National Bank. They had bought some lenders here with the loss share agreement with the federal government. And so we were just kind of their go-to every time and built a brand. And, really it hasn't been there's no secret sauce. We really just try to get 0.1% better every day. And so you can get 35% better a year. So, that's really right. what we tried to do.
Well, let me hit on a few things. One was that, you started this thing on, when you got out, you're making 6 figures. You could have kind of built up your lifestyle, had the sweet car and the sweet place to live, but instead you chose to sacrifice, live on a futon, save up your money, get into real estate. And, I think that's a common theme that I hear with a lot of successful people is that they sacrificed, you know, early so that they can, you know, enjoy the fruits later. And I think that just in general, you know, the American way is, you know, when you get a raise, when you hop from one company to the next company, that you end up buying the nicer car, the nicer house, and people are unhappy in their job, but they feel like they can't make a change. And right. So you were smart to have bootstrapped yourself like that, lived way below your means, which gave you flexibility
and freedom.
Absolutely. And that's what so many people are looking for, is freedom of their time and freedom of money. Right.
Yeah. And that's, and like you said, the perfect thing is you have to sacrifice to get there. I mean, a lot of people don't, you know, they want their cake and they want to eat it too.
Right.
And, you know, since I was 4 years old, it was always drilled in my head constantly. Hey, Ryan, you can pay now and play later, or you can play now and pay later.
Oh, I love that.
I
love
that. You know, and, you know, I was learning about leverage, not on 200 unit complexes, but, you know, it'd be like my father would say, well, Ryan, I have this 10 unit and I paid $100,000. These are old prices, right? So this is aging me, but he would say, look, I paid $100,000. I got a loan for 70 from the bank. The person selling it to me loaned me another 10. And then I had to use $20,000 of savings. And I was learning those basics when I was 6 years old.
Oh, you know? That's so
and,
great.
You know, and even though my father ended up being very wealthy, you know, from when I was very little, and I have three older brothers, they experienced more of this. You know, every weekend we were mowing the lawns at the properties. We were doing those things. Now, obviously, after it met a certain... After it got to a certain point, you know, in my teens, we weren't out mowing lawns anymore. But my father's always been a huge proponent of, you know, you don't have any control over how smart you are, how good looking you are, but you have complete control on how hard you work and how many sacrifices you're willing to take. And so it's, you know, a lot of times people ask me, well, how did you come up with this idea? You know, you've been so successful in your business. And what I tell them is, you know, property management has been around since at least the days of Rome. So it's at least 2,000 years old. It's not a new idea. It's not some fancy concept I came up with. I mean, you are aware of some of our softwares and stuff Sure. that we've done that have helped the business. But the core line business is not a complicated business. It's about getting the best people. You know, always sticking by your morals and adhering to your integrity in all cases. And that's just how I was raised. Little did I know that would be a huge benefit in running a business, especially the space that we're in, which is, you know, if people trust you because you have integrity, they're willing, you get more business. You can even usually charge a little higher management fee if they know that they can trust you. What they're seeing is what they're getting.
Sure.
And so I've been very blessed. I'm basically the American dream, right?
Yeah. And you know what? You brought something up that I go to a lot of real estate conferences, but I also go to a lot of entrepreneurial conferences and just hear from different speakers that are wealthy and have done very, very well for themselves. And I hear that concept over and over, is like, you know, there's so many people out there that are trying to find the one idea that nobody else has come up with. And they feel like they can't start their own business unless they find that idea. But in reality, most businesses, they're already out there. That you're right. Just going out and doing it better.
Right.
You know, you're solving an issue that other customers are receiving by using different vendors, different partners, and you're going out and making it better. So you don't have to recreate it.
Yeah. Ricardo, our tree trimmer for my house, has one of the largest tree trimming companies in probably a 5 mile radius. I know for a fact that he's a multimillionaire and he trims trees.
Right.
I know that's been around for probably longer than 2000 years.
Absolutely.
So he just does it a smidget better. He's always on time. He's honest and forthright with his employees, so he keeps the good ones. And surprise, surprise, he lives a very comfortable life, right?
Absolutely.
I think that's part of it. You know, part of the sacrifice and living under your means is, you know, if you're, especially when I was starting my business, and even, you know, let's call it up to about 2012, you know, at those periods of time, if I lived at my means, not below, and let's say I had a client that was abusive or not reasonable, but I was living right at my means and I had to, you know, it thwarts the growth of a business hanging on to certain clients that are abusive or unreasonable or unsatiable. They have unsatiable expectations. If you're comfortable enough to go, hey, I don't need this to make the mortgage.
Right.
Guess what? You have 30 days to find somebody else. You free your mind, you know, you enhance your moxie, if you will, yeah, to be able to get better opportunities. Where if you're in a situation where you're spending everything you make or even more with debt, then you kind of, you put yourself in a, you know, put yourself in a metaphorical vice grip that you have to stay there and keep taking the pain, right?
That's a great point, is being able to choose your customers. And if you're right at the cusp, then you don't have that luxury of being able to choose. And you know, not many people bring that up. And I think that's a great point. Hey, something else that you brought up, which I think is important, is that, you know, you got into real estate, you started seeing the benefits of leveraging, you know, real estate and growing wealth. And then things got a little bit haywire. Like, you know, real estate got a little bit crazy. And you noticed that. And so back in that time frame that you mentioned, 2002 to 2006, I was actually on a loan trading desk, trading large portfolios of residential and multifamily loans. And I kind of saw the same thing. Like, you know, our biggest competitors at the time were Washington Mutual and Countrywide. And in 2005 and definitely moving in 2006, it was starting to become this
thing. You had a front row seat.
I did. I had a front row seat. And
you mine know, was more of a gut feeling. I didn't know all of the different mathematical factors.
I saw it, and we were losing market share because I was working for ABN AMRO and they would not go down the credit profile spectrum. And I'm thankful they didn't. But at the time, we were losing market share because Washington Mutual and Countrywide were writing all these stated income loans. And I told my wife, I said, I was living in South Florida at the time. This just doesn't make sense. You know, this is going to end badly. You know, when real estate prices are going up 15, 20% a year and incomes are only going up 3 or 4, like at some point something's got to give. And so you had a gut feel and you took action and actually liquidated everything. And that not only did you liquidate everything, but you said, I'm going to look in the entire US and look for what markets are attractive to go and redistribute that capital. And that, I mean, props to you for doing that. That's fantastic. And you know, so
that's another part. It's called taking action. I mean, you can go to a million seminars and read a million books. If you don't take action, it's just all fantasy. And
yeah, I mean, look, I mean, that's so important to listen to podcasts, read books, meet other people that are doing what you want to do, you know, hire mentors. But at some point, you got to take action, and or else it doesn't mean anything. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. just discussion point. I mean, none of us has a crystal ball, but you know, this COVID situation, we're recording this near the end of September. It'll probably won't air for, you know, another four or six weeks. But
is it going to air before or after the election?
probably it might even be election week. You know, it's either it's plus or minus right around that point in time. So we don't have the crystal ball in terms of what's going to happen there either. But yeah. I feel like I have conversations with my wife and other people, and I feel like we're in a weird time right now because, you know, we had all of a sudden all this huge unemployment. you know, so much stimulus that went out there, and most likely they're going to come out with another round of stimulus. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I go out, man, you know, if you're in the Dallas market, you go out to Legacy West, and it doesn't look like there. We just had, you know, middle of recession. I mean, people are out, people are spending, people are at restaurants.
Boats are sold out.
Yeah,
like ATVs are sold out. Everything's sold out.
But to me, there's just feels like there's something, you know, not right about it. Like that you at some point with
well,
so
you're
many
leading
people,
the witness, but you're leading me in the same direction.
All right. Okay, yeah. Go for it. Tell me your thoughts on this whole thing.
You know, I don't know the future. So just like you said, and just give you a little bit of historical because, you know, I did use leverage. I learned about it. You know, it was when I had no assets and I wanted to, you know, make my mark and all that. I've kind of done the inverse. You know, I'm probably a lot less leveraged now than the overall market. And so just to kind of clarify, I'm probably at on the 1,000 units and I'm probably at a 40 LTV if you combine them all. So I'm very, very low leverage now. I don't usually do cash out unless I have a partner pushing for that. But typically if I have a refinance, I don't take any cash out and stuff. Because I kind of look at real estate, at least now and probably over the last 7-8 years, it's a get rich, definitely over the long term thing. I'm not, I don't have the appetite to quadruple it in 2 years with, you know, with that leverage multiplier. Because I don't need that to live a good lifestyle for the rest of my life. I'd rather not lose and gain a little bit year over year. I didn't have that luxury when I was 23, right?
No, in the beginning, you're in growth mode and you're in full leverage mode. And then after a while, you get to capital preservation.
If you have a bad 2 or 3 years in the economy, you'll just struggle through it. And, you know, I don't really want to do that at this point. Because what do I have to gain? I don't want a private jet. It's not my driver, right? My whole driver is freedom and be able to wake up and do what I want that day, every single day. So, I mean, that's just one kind of disclaimer a little bit. But in terms of the economy going forward, you know, I am baffled. I know that, you know, we have the Fed put or, you know, where they've printed $6 trillion. What I would say is, you know, I have a lot of liquidity right now. I'm not jumping into deals with a lot of leverage. I am putting a few deals together, not enough for my own liking, but, you know, working on a 100-unit deal and another 80-unit deal I put together a few months ago. And I'm going personally, I can just share with you my personal experiences. You know, I'm going in 40% down. I'm doing a lower leverage deals, even on the ones that I'm currently buying, because I think that gives me some wiggle room if there's a, you know, a correction. In terms of, you know, we're in a little bit of a rock and a hard place that there is, I think, some asset inflation with respect to real estate, stocks, probably a myriad of other things that I'm not really tracking. The catch 22 is they've printed $6 trillion. I know they printed a lot of money after 2009, but I think it's being done at like quadruple the pace right now.
Right.
And so I know, you know, the smart people are saying, well, there was no rampant inflation before. It's not going to happen. I'm of the belief that it, you know, the smart people will explain what happened last week when the dollar went down 30%. I mean, all the smart economists will start talking about what happened. I don't see that, you know, I studied economics in college. And what I learned in during that is that they're right less than 50% of the time. So it's, I don't know if there's going to be another black swan event or if, you know, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to happen. It's identical to when I left Southern California. I wasn't in the midst, you know, on the front row seat, understanding all of the derivative market and so forth. But I knew enough to know that there is gravity. And at some point, gravity takes hold. Right. And I'm thinking that my advice to people, so experience share with what I'm doing. My advice to people is, you know, I also don't think it's a great idea to hold on to a lot of cash right now. That's the catch 22, because cash in and of itself is an asset. And I think it's at risk over the next 12 to 18 months. Could be wrong. It's under some inflationary risk. And then I think that, you know, if you look at a real estate deal and it just barely pencils, you know, I would steer clear of that. But there's people that are smarter than me that are charging those deals. I don't know what perspective they're looking at it from, but I'm not nervous in being in DFW or even in Oklahoma City. And I'm actually not nervous about being in Houston at a decent value and with a little lower leverage.
Right.
Now that's what makes me feel more comfortable. There's ways to do the math where you can have more leverage and just more reserves. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. I'm a pretty simple guy when it comes to
that.
But I just follow my gut.
But you know what? You're consistent with, hey, you ended up feeling something in your gut back in California and you liquidated. And you're not necessarily saying that you're liquidating everything now, but you are saying that you know what, you've got liquidity and that you're going to every deal very carefully and with low leverage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have shifted your focus based on where we're at in the, mm-hmm. in the market and in the cycle. So,
and I shifted my focus somewhat to that probably 2 or 3 years ago, which was probably 2 or 3 years too early.
Right.
So I don't pretend to be a market timer. I would have been.
Well, that's the other thing is I would say is that a lot of times there's a pretty big lag between, you know, when some people see stuff and when, you know, the shit hits the fan. Mm-hmm. So when I told my wife back in 2006, I said it's 2006, right? But if you ask anybody when the Great Recession was, what do they say? 2008.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, I was a couple years early on that one, you mm-hmm. know? And so who knows what's going to happen, but I appreciate your perspective on it. Talk about how, you know, property management companies are such a key component as a partner for, you know, a property owner and, you know, a syndicator, and talk about some of the, you know, the benefits of really leveraging the experience of a strong property management company.
Sure. So, I mean, there's the basic, especially if they have and I look at it a little bit differently than some property management companies. Wainer Multifamily tends to geographically cluster itself because we see that we get more economies of scale and large referral and viral recruitment and stuff when we have a lot of properties in certain areas, and it helps with marketing as well. So I think that if you have a regional player that that knows that market, that has a large employee base that they can use as a stepping stone to get to recruit other employees. I mean, that's the basics of the business. You need to have the best employees, right? And so you want to have that network of employees. If you self-manage, you have a great manager. I tell people that when they self-manage, you have a great manager, you're married to the manager. You fire him or her, or she gets sick and you're in a big trouble. When you have a large property management company that can pull other resources that fit that exact scenario, I mean, it's a huge benefit. I would say that's probably the biggest benefit. Then there's all the kind of conventional things, which is the pricing on things that we get is going to be much more beneficial than what an individual can get. We have, and I know there's an economics term for this. I don't remember what it is, but we have somebody who focuses on water usage every day and monitors that. They're a specialist. Then we have somebody who focuses on interior make readies, the paint quality of the paint work from the different paint contractors. We have a specialist there. You have a specialist in accounting. We have a specialist in reconciliation. you have a specialist with regards to marketing. So you, when you have a larger organization, you can create people. You mean you can basically set up your business to have people that are inch wide but a mile deep,
right?
Versus when you have a smaller organization, you know, they're an inch deep and a mile wide, and so you know you tend to find a lot of issues and inefficiencies in that second scenario. So you get specialized services, you get group pricing discounts, and you have the larger network for recruitment. I mean, I think that those are the three largest areas of leverage that you get with the larger professional player. Not to mention, you don't have to be at the property, right? One of my properties in San Antonio, there was a fire this weekend on Saturday. I wasn't getting on a plane and flying down there. The regional manager called me, said, here's what the case is. Said, you better reach Israel, our construction supervisor. He got on the phone. They handled it. He was there yesterday morning. So it's just peace of mind that I don't have to leave my family in the middle of the night to fly down there and see what's going on. And I've been there. And you remember the first couple assets, I was the regional manager. I was the everything, right?
Right. Absolutely. Well, so I could share a little experience from myself. So before owning any multifamily, you know, I'm part of a multifamily mentorship group, and I went and asked a lot of syndicators, you know, who do you use property management? What's the good, the bad, and the ugly? And, you know, who do you like, and who's helped you, you know, execute your business plan? And with, you know, through all those conversations, I ended up selecting, you know, to work with you guys. And that's kind of the extent of what I knew, right? So I was going off of the recommendations of other people that I had built relationships with. Now, that was a 76 unit townhome community about 20 minutes south of Fort Worth. And we purchased that at the end of 2018. So we've owned it for a little less than 2 years. Well, in that time, you know, Wayner has been a fantastic partner in a number of different areas. So first of all, I had a lot of syndicators telling me, hey, Darren, once you close, you're going to end up having a lot of turnover. A lot of people are going to leave, tenants. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen with my property. Maybe your property, but not mine, right? Sure enough, it does, right? So all of a sudden, you know, we're mid-90s occupancy and we drop into the low 80s. And I'm like, holy cow, we've got all these units available. And our property is pretty small, so 76 units. So we have one leasing manager and one maintenance person. I'm like, there's no way that one guy is going to be able to rehab all these units and get these back up. And so I called the regional and no problem, Darren. Well, we've got all these other properties, like you said, clustered, you know, in the DFW market. And we'll just pull some of the maintenance guys off of some of these other properties and we'll come down there and we'll bang them all out. And I was like, wow. Like if I was self-managing, that would have been a nightmare for me to figure out, right?
Oh, plus you were being billed at their hourly wages.
And oh, yeah.
If you were on your own, you would be hiring a make-ready company that really didn't have wasn't going to be interested after they got paid.
Absolutely.
So products that our same company can sell it. I mean,
so you guys brought the team out there. You guys, you know, turned the units over and then the leasing manager leased them all. And then all of a sudden, like it was a scary 2 to 4 week time period for me as a new, you know, syndicator, a new owner. I was like, oh man, like my investors are going to be like, what the hell did I get myself into? But what happened was now all of a sudden, instead of just turning a few units and then, you know, having to wait till the next month to turn a few more units, we were able to turn all those units, upgrade them and get higher rents. We were getting like another $150 to $200 per unit. And so we had that for a much longer period of time during the year and it ended up being a good thing, but it was scary at first.
It is. I get more nervous when I have investors or clients than when I'm just investing with my own money.
Right.
You know, because I don't feel like my reputation's tied up in it when it's my own. I mean, I just make the decisions and move on. But I know that the angst that you probably had, probably more with regards to your reputation versus, oh, we're going to collect $5,000 less this month and next month. And after that, you know, it's hard to kind of stomach that part of it, because I can tell the type of personality you have is that you're empathetic type of person, usually makes you a better syndicator, but it also makes you stay up late at night when you have an extra 4 or 5 vacants.
Right.
Whereas if you just owned it yourself, you'd put the same effort towards it, but it wouldn't put knots in your stomach, right? Because you only have to explain to your wife.
Yeah,
it's hard enough, but that's
exactly. It cuts both ways though. Like, so it puts more pressure on the challenges. But it's also that much more exciting to me because, you know, as we work together, you know, Wainer Multifamily, us and we improve the property, and eventually we have some kind of exit strategy, either a refi or a sale. And it's not just Darren Batchelder and my family that benefits financially. It's like 44 other families that, you know, I get to help grow their wealth too. So it cuts both ways. Yeah. It's nerve wracking when we have a challenge. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when we sell it for a profit, it's going to be a very,
that is a huge part. And that's one of the things that I didn't really touch upon about building a business and stuff. If, you know, there's this kind of neat media or kind of unfair media narrative that, you know, the business owners, especially wealthy ones, are, you know, just out trying to make money. And what's great about our country and the free market is it's really about serving others. That's the only way you make money. And so when you are wired to want to serve others, surprise, surprise, you do much better in a business arena. And that's one of the most, personally satisfying things of my business is, you know, all of the people that myself and more specifically my company have benefited in terms of, you know, their retirement, in terms of the syndicators, even your investors, we're helping benefit them. But then there's, you know, even the lender, their current, you know, our properties are current on their loans, which are in funds that are supporting different,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it just all kind of goes,
huge ripple effect,
pension plans. And I mean, there's huge ripples everywhere. And when we do something, let's call it 5% better than our competitor, that really has a big impact in, you know, the health of the loans that support the properties that we manage, the overall retirement benefits to the investors. I mean, making an assumption that most of your investors are using it for retirement and not to go buy a Ferrari once they cash
out.
But, you know, to each his own, they can do whatever they want. But I feel like we're helping their retirement. In many cases, we're helping them put their kids through college in 20 years from now. And those 3 or 4 or 5% improvements seem like peanuts, but over a 10 or 15 year period, I mean, you know, the law of sevens. I mean, that's a big difference.
Absolutely.
In terms of, you know, what college they can send to them. Do their kids need to take on loans to go for this? Do they get to get their vacation home in their mid-50s? You know, all these things get, or do they just make enough money to even be able to retire? Or are they going to have to go on the government dole in their 60s? So it really is. It's a very self-satisfying thing there. Not to mention, you know, we've created opportunities, as you know, that we've taken on a partner, a private equity firm as a partner.
Talk about that.
A little over a year ago. But, you know, it's just felt very good. I mean, obviously, it felt good for me and my family. It was a huge windfall. I'm not ashamed of my success or in even the financial success. I kind of look at it as more of a scorecard than my driving factor. But there was a few employees that did very well with our company. Many of them probably would have done pretty well anyways, but there's a few that I really get that I bet would not have done as well unless they had worked in my organization. And, you know, that just brings a lot of joy to me that, you know,
yeah, that's huge.
Very significantly in a very short period of time affected their whole family tree. And obviously they affected my family tree as well. But it just makes you feel really good when you can enrich the people around you. I mean, that's a big reason that, especially the people that are close to you in your inner circle, they have to be people that share the same values. You know, our company, the motto has been forever, you know, treat the client's asset and finances like they're your own. That, the theory that I went into, it's golden rule of business. It's why I fired the one group. And I said, if I'm going to do this for other people, I'm not treating it like it's theirs. I'm treating it like it's mine. And that's been a cultural change in our, I mean, that's just been the culture of our company. And look, I treat it like my own, our employees treat it like it's their own. But that's not to say we don't make mistakes. Because I make mistakes with my own money. I make mistakes with my own assets. But if the intention is there, if that's your why, surprise, surprise, you end up doing better, serving your clients better.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, congratulations.
That we live in, you get paid for that attitude in business, right?
Absolutely. Congratulations, by the way. I mean, look, when you were sitting on that futon, did you ever think that you were going to grow a company to 25,000 units that you were managing?
Goodness, no. I didn't.
So how'd you do it, man? You did it one step at a time.
0.1% better, get 0.1% better a day, and you know you're gonna that's how the business grew. I really wanted to make a good living, have like I told you from the beginning, wake up every morning, 4 out of 5 mornings, wake up doing exactly what I want to do that day. It's never 5 out of 5, but 4 out of 5 days, if I can wake up and do exactly what I want to do, that's a big deal to me. And so that was my goal, and to be able to raise my family. I have 3 children now. I wanted to be able to raise my family, have them have a comfortable lifestyle. That was really the main goal that I had. And that's what my vision was back then. Of course, when you get to a certain size, there's certain things about businesses, or at least my own theories and how I grew it, which was, did I need to get it to 25,000 units and take on all the stress of continually growing 30, 40% a year in size for, you know, half a decade? I didn't need that for our lifestyle. But what I determined was, you know, when I had my second in command, let's call it the top 20 people in those supervisory roles, to keep the best people engaged, the pie has to constantly be getting bigger. So it did put pressure on me, not because I want to have a Ferrari, so I was trying to grow the business, but I felt like we had to continually healthily grow the business to keep the best
employees.
If you don't, you get the employees that are happy with, because in business, you're either growing or you're shrinking. I mean, rarely and for very short periods of time can you actually be flat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point and a great perspective.
People and have them fully engaged, the pie has to continually grow. And that is, you know, that's one of the things that makes a CEO and a founder stressed, you know, is that you got to keep the ball rolling, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So for the listeners, look, there's a lot of listeners that are, you know, either looking to get into real estate for the first time, or they're in real estate, but they want to scale up maybe from residential to multifamily, or they're in multifamily and they want to really scale up into syndication and really start blowing it out. And I've had a lot of people, you know, talk to me and they're like, look, man, there's so much there. There's like so many things I have to do. Like it just is overwhelming. Look, you didn't think to yourself when you were sitting on that futon, man, I got all these things I have to do to get to 25,000 units, man. You just go out and take action and start, mm-hmm. you know, and then try to improve every day, you know, like you said.
That's 100% of it, is constantly try to improve, constantly take those opportunities that fall in your lap. Like I said, I didn't have a design to even have a property management company before that futon, right?
Absolutely.
And so you take the opportunities that come your way. You're going to have certain ones that are better and certain that are not as good. And then you just have to go out and act. And you really consistently have to go out and act. You have to go and try things consistently. Don't worry about being told no. Don't worry about failing.
Or what other people think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that holds a lot of people back.
Yes, it does. And it's kind of, for me, it's always been a double-edged sword. It's obviously worked great, but you've probably heard, Darren, I wore a collared shirt today because I thought we were going to be on camera, but I'm in t-shirts.
I can vouch he is in a collared shirt, but we're audio only, so it won't be visible.
I think people know, at least in DFW, that have been in multifamily know, well, Ryan's the guy that has a t-shirt from Target and uncombed hair. And I mean, he's just folk, you know, most of our best skills are a double-edged sword, right? So our biggest advantage is usually our biggest our biggest strength is usually our biggest weakness. And I think my wife, Buffy, is like, you know, I love it that you just don't care what other people think. But in certain cases, I really hate that you don't care what people think.
That's great. So, hey, you mentioned markets that you're really getting into the Houston market.
Excited about that place.
Talk about why you like Houston.
You know, I'm not going to talk in terms of investments yet, but we love the market in terms of property management.
Okay.
So I just want to put that layer on it for your listenership is, you know, we went in about 4 or 5 years. I want to say 4 years ago, we went into Oklahoma City. Actually, we were offered to underwrite a deal and see if we could manage it by somebody that you probably know, Dustin Miles.
Yep.
Deal he was having trouble with in that market. And so we spent a lot of time in those days just saying, no, we're not interested. We're always turning down other markets. And my wife is from Norman, Oklahoma. I kind of knew the market. I'm like, it's only 2.5-3 hour drive. Let's just go take a look at it. Let's underwrite it. Let's do the, see what the deal looks like. And then let's see what, if we're not interested in managing it, let's just go ahead and vet some other management companies in the area. Cause you know, Dustin, he's a great guy.
Absolutely. And it's funny because he's actually going to be on the show probably the week before you.
Oh, okay. So I was like, either way, we just need to help him out. You know, I just like him, you know? So we went up there and then, you know, we underwrote the deal and looked at the our whole due diligence process, and people can go on my website and watch the video. It's a 10-minute video. It shows all of the proprietary software and everything that we use and technology to do everything. But we went up there, did that, underwrote the deal, looked at the market comps. Then I spent a lot of time, you know, a good 2 weeks trying to find a replacement management company for them. And we had a lot of difficulty finding competent management companies for those type of assets. You know, that C, maybe he was calling it a B back then, but it was really a C plus or whatever.
Right.
And you know, we couldn't get, it was either somebody working out of the back of their truck or it was, you know, some multinational management company that was fly in a regional once or twice a quarter. And we knew that was going to go over like a fart in church, just wasn't going to work on that asset that needed to be repositioned. And so we put a lot of resources up there, did his deal. And that's when I started reaching out to brokers and stuff up there, not because I loved Oklahoma City real estate values, but because I loved the competitive landscape for property management companies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So really in property management, you just need to be doing better than your competitors. You know, Oklahoma City, OKC, those areas, they're always going to have lower rent than, or not always, but over the last 50 years, they're always 20% less on rents. At least over the last 5 years, there's always a higher vacancy factor up there. But as long as we're at the very peak in the market in terms of occupancy, I don't worry that it's 91 versus in DFW we're at 96. I'm worried that we're at 91 and all the other competitive properties are at 87. We feel good, right?
Right.
We'd
right.
have to be 95 everywhere all the time with no loss to lease, and but we have to live in planet reality. So it's really, you know, you don't outrun the bear, you just outrun the guy next to you is kind of the approach we looked at there. And that's what I liked about OKC. That's where we see a huge opportunity for us in Houston. They do have some professional management companies down there that we'll have some of the competition. We'll have, it's down there for us. But there is a lot of product that we specialize in, that C to low to mid B range. There is a lot of product there. There's a lot of apartment buildings there that are not being professionally managed. We see a huge opportunity for us to make a big splash there. And we're going to put all of the resources. We're basically considering it a loss leader. We're going to be overstaffed there because it's a large market. There are a few key players there that serve clients nearly as well as us. They don't have the proprietary technology that we have. They don't have the leak detection software that we have. They don't have the product sourced directly from China like we have. So we have some competitive advantages there. Plus, there's just a huge amount of apartment buildings there that are our bread and butter. And so we think that we can make a big move into that market. And currently, we're in a situation where, I mean, we think that there's relatively high odds that the deal closed, and it's a very large, just south of 1,000 unit portfolio that we're working on right now, as well as a few other ones. And it really makes it easier for us, kind of inside baseball, if we have a huge anchor to start with. So
yeah,
not as much of a loss leader,
right?
As
exactly.
Little of as a loss leader as possible, with the idea that we're going to go down there, show our mousetrap, and then the business usually the business comes, kind of, to take a phrase from Field of Dreams, if we build it, they will come. So if they come and see that we're doing, then we tend to start getting huge referrals from brokers, other property owners that are looking to have their assets salvaged. And so that's we're very excited about that. We have recently entered into Arkansas, into the into Little Rock. So we're very excited about that opportunity as well. It's obviously it's not as large of an opportunity there. Candidly, I don't know a lot about the market there. I know that our VP of Ops spent a lot of time there in his old company. He's actually spent a lot of time in Houston as well. So I have people that are deeper in their fields that know that stuff versus me, which, you know, I think Darren, you've been a client, and we've spoken in person right now and probably not before, right? Or
no,
maybe in passing at one of the events. But I've become more of, over the last 5-6 years, pre the sell of the partnership of the company, I have gradually, probably over the last 6-7 years, become more about working on the new products, the softwares, the apps, the Chinese relationship, the office we've built in China, and building the team. Candidly, I couldn't even honestly fill out a lease. I don't even know how to fill a lease out, and I don't know how to change a toilet.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I mean, that was a question that I had, and I think that other syndicators had, is when you did have the partner come in, you know, and you had the capital event, you know, hey, is Ryan going to stay on board, and what's his role going to be? Mm-hmm. And so if you could talk about that, and I think that you also mentioned to me that something to do with a software platform that you have as well. So maybe talk about those two things.
So I think my official title is executive chairman, something like that. I've never been a big titles guy, but I'm doing a lot of what I did. For the most part, I'm doing exactly what I did probably the 2 years prior to taking on the partnership, which was mainly business development and looking at new market opportunities. And and building out softwares and systems, right? I am still exactly in that same role. Fernando is more involved with the business development and less of the operations than he was pre-partnership. So we brought in a very high-level VP of operations, Sergio. He's wonderful. He's been a large company. He's much more adult type of person, right? Than maybe myself. I don't want to say professional, but if that kind of gets a point across. He's just more, he wears blazers. He's very involved.
He comes from the corporate world.
Yeah, and is an entrepreneur, fly by the seat of his pants type of guy.
Right, right. Makes sense.
And it's been a wonderful partnership. We actually, Fernando and I started to work on, we weren't, you know, unsolicited. We went to some investment bankers through the end of 2018 and got some different, learned from different investment bankers and made our selection around, I think it was April or May of 2000, or no, probably about February of 2019. We made our decision on who we worked with. We're very helpful through the process. And we really did it in a very methodical way. And they went to market kind of just the same way that one of the large brokers would go to market with the apartment asset. And literally during the IOI phase of that process, which is equivalent to the LOI phase of an apartment building.
Right.
We had 23 offers.
So. Oh, wow.
And we had, Fernando and I met with, you know, formal meetings with 18 of those groups.
Holy cow.
So we spent a month and a half, and these are all 4 or 5 hour meetings, a lot of times going out for dinner afterwards. So that was a very exhaustive process. But I wanted to make sure that we had a partner that would really serve the company and, you know, by extension, the clients and the employees as well, that really fit our culture and what I thought was actually needed going forward. And, you know, I think that Fernando and I were great at building a company probably up to about 20,000 units. You know, we've just made it up as we went along the entire
right.
part of the business. And it was around 19, 20,000 units. We're like, look, we need another adult in the room. to help us that's had, you know, experience growing a business from 5 million in EBITDA to 10, you know, I don't really want to learn the hard way like we've done the last 12 years.
Yeah.
Or for him, like 9 or 10 years. And he came in about 3 years into it. But as you get bigger, the mistakes cost 20 times more. And, right. you know, I have enough gray hair as it is. I don't want to look exactly like your hair.
thank you very much. Hey, they couldn't even see that. So.
So that's why we really wanted somebody. So the group that we selected, and then during the follow-up final offers, they were not the highest price, but they were near the, you know, the fully operational, operations-focused private equity group. So the two principals, one was with Bain Capital for a long time, was not Bain Consulting, but Capital. So they actually had improved businesses. The other person worked there for a while, was also a CEO of a Fortune 1000 company for 10 years of his life. They were totally focused. They got it right at the beginning. It was all about the employees and secondarily our processes and tech. And what they helped us do was, Fernando and I have done very well, and even Alan did well at hiring property level people, construction, where we weren't very successful or not at the same level as the group we brought in is bringing in those C-level suite executives. We had a lot of false starts. We just didn't look at it the right way. Literally, Sergio, Tiffany and finance and accounting, all the top five people that they've brought in, they've on average had 15 to 20 hours of interviews. They've met with five different groups in Boca Raton, where the PE group is. They met with us. They had to take personality tests. They called all of their references. They call what they call references that are not, that weren't given. They'll call other employees, go through their network to see what the person's really like. It is amazing the difference in quality, and you waste a lot less time with picking the wrong horse. It's amazing how I'm just blown away by, you know, at least 75% of the people that they brought in that C-level side. And I mean, it's really, really been a blessing to work with them. I am involved in the business, but, you know, a lot of the significant changes and improvements that are taking place are not completely driven by me anymore, which is nice. And really, I feel honored to have my name on the company's logo, that what they're changing it into. I really feel honored to be a part of it.
Well, that's great that you guys went through that exhaustive process. And I could tell you from a
pay now, play later, right?
Right. From a customer perspective, I'm very appreciative. You know, look, I mean, you're bringing in team members that are not only going to help Wainer Multifamily get to the next level, but are going to help Darren Batchelder and all the other property owners and syndicators, you know, do that much better on their properties. So, you know, we could leverage the experience from your entire team. So that's, I'm thankful for that. Talk about the software piece of things and how that kind of plays in.
So you may be aware of this. Wainer Multifamily has a software called LeakAware. And so yep. It's a mobile enhanced software, basically with an app. So our employee, our maintenance tech will type in the meter reading every day, and it lets you know if there's spikes. It'll have it attached to the meter. Then there's a template that goes to every single one of the units that's attached to that meter, and a full workflow device that, you know, makes them go and check every water source that's attached to that meter. And then they have to take photos if there's a leak. And then it creates a workflow device that is kept accountable by the supervisors. They'll have a summary of which employees have which leaks or which meters are leaking. And so they can look at it and keep everybody accountable. So what that is still free with Wainer Multifamily. What I did carve that out of the transaction. So although it's going to be it's provided for free to Wainer Multifamily, I am currently working on an enhancement of the software, which is going to add on a piece of hardware that we have a semi-exclusive use of a piece of hardware. It's called the Sentinel. We attach it to the meter. It does the readings every 10, 15 seconds. So there's no maintenance guy, and, you know, monitoring a maintenance guy, make sure he's putting in the meter reading. It literally measures the water meter constantly. And then we're enhancing the software for it to work better, and it'll be, it's fully API'd with that piece of hardware. So kind of like what you've experienced now, other than a little bit better graphics, some better usability, functionality. But the main difference is your maintenance person doesn't have to go and make the meter readings every day. They'll know that when there's a spike within 5 seconds, or it's called 15 seconds to be fully accurate. They'll give you a reading right to their phone and to the supervisor's dashboard immediately. And so that's something that we're going to be taking to market. I'm going to be taking to market. Of course, Wainer's going to have an opportunity to buy the hardware and to API that with the software. And so we'll be offering that to Wainer, and they'll obviously have the software part for free. But it's a very cost-effective solution for monitoring leaks immediately, organizes the water sources that are attached to that meter, and then creates a workflow and accountable process to make sure that things are being fixed. First of all, inspected in time, and then repaired in time, and in a very simple, aggregated manner. So our director of operations, our facilities, director of facilities, he can look at every one of the regional managers and know, you know, regional manager, I don't want to use a real name, but.
I get it. You don't use one.
I have Lisa. So regional manager, Lisa, She has 75 meters under her. Two are in red. Of those two that are in red, they're behind on doing the internal inspections of the red meters by 2 days, or they've been done on time, but they have 5 days to repair it and they're over schedule and it summarizes it all. So you can see things in a snapshot if you are a supervisor, and then it gets more granular as it goes down, down the hill to down to the maintenance tech.
Well, that's exciting. And I think that's also going to be a differentiator for you moving into that Houston market to be able to differentiate yourself between the different property management companies. And for the listeners, you know, for those that are large syndicators and have lots of properties under management, you know that water is a big expense item. And so if you can be on top of, you know, saving money by detecting leaks early on, that's such a critical component. For listeners that, you know, are just getting into it or just growing, you know, just keep that in mind that, you know, you will see when you look at your P&L that water is a significant component, and it's very important to have a strategy behind monitoring and, you know, staying on top of that.
One thing to that, and I don't want to hit too much.
No, go ahead.
But one thing to keep in mind, even people with a lot of multifamily experience that sometimes don't know it to this level, is most municipalities have tiered water pricing. So in many cases, we may, through our, you know, locating the leaks and then monitoring the water meters, let's say on average, we only save 15% of, you know, the quantifiable units of water. Most cities, most municipalities, they charge a lower rate, let's call it for the first 10,000 gallons. Then 10,000 to 20,000 gallons, they might go from 0.01 cents to 0.03 cents.
Oh, wow.
So as it goes up, it has an exponentially painful effect on your bottom line, right?
So I didn't
realize
that.
Sometimes you save 10% water usage, and it's actually you're saving 25% of your water bill. And it's for obvious reasons. Municipality wants to encourage lower use of water, right? So
right.
For a myriad of different reasons, and sometimes it has to affect their sewer systems and everything else. So has a huge impact there. It also, another thing that you know about DFW is it's some of the most expansive soil in the country. So what effects create a lot of foundation issues. That happens anyways when you have underground leaks and you have expansive soil, it creates huge issues with regards to foundations. And not to mention, it can create mold issues within a wall, which is can create black mold. So there's a lot of things that this, and that's why I'll be working on this leak aware, which I'm working on by myself, not really through Wainer, but that we have some things where maybe we can get some credits back from insurance once we get the volume of users up.
Fantastic. No, I'm glad you brought up those points. Those were, so Ryan, what do you do outside of work for fun? Besides surfing, but
I don't do much of that now. But, you know, I live right off of White Rock Lake, so I do a lot of biking. I have a 6, 8, and 10-year-old boy. So the 10-year-old's Lincoln. He goes to Cistercian on Cistercian School up in Irving, and then I got Augustus. We call him Gus and Sterling, and they go to St. Thomas Aquinas, and you know they're playing soccer, football, basketball.
You've got some busy weekend years coming up where you're just traveling around with the boys for sports.
Yeah. Then I like to do sand buggies. I have a razor that I take. I grew up going to the sand dunes, so I still have it out there in California. And myself and the and then my boys have quads, and so we fly out there and go with my family and friends, you know, 3-4 times a year. And then
awesome.
Do a couple snowboard trips. And I just got a vacation place around my family in Seal Beach for us to go visit. And my boys have literally 9 of their cousins live there in Seal Beach that are within the same age range. My parents have 15 grandkids.
Holy cow.
17 grandkids, and 9 of them are in that same age range as my boys. right there in Seal Beach. So it's really cool. It's like, are we going to have a sleepover? Can we, you know, it's just,
yeah, it makes it a lot of fun.
Beach and everything. It's all about their cousins. I mean, they just sure hang out with their cousins the whole time. So, you know, that's about it.
And then awesome. Awesome. Well, good family fun there for sure. Hey, Ryan, if people want to reach out to you or want to get to know you better or know more about Wainer, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Sure. If they want to learn about Wainer, you know, in a more of a general sense, I would encourage them to look at Wainer Multifamily. That's W-E-H-N-E-R multifamily.com. You can, you know, read about it. And then there's a video with a very handsome, symmetrically faced gentleman, about a 10-minute video, show a lot of our technology and our due diligence process and stuff. So that's if you want to learn about Wainer on that. If you have more specific things that I'd really encourage watching the video up there, because it does explain a lot about our business and our process. It's kind of like a frequently asked question thing, but you can just watch it for 10 minutes. And then if you want to reach out, there's an info at Wainer Multifamily. If you have some more specific things, you know, I don't typically give out my personal email because I'll be bombarded. But if you go through info at Wainer Multifamily and you speak to, and you shoot an email and you have a request to speak with me, they'll relay it to me, and then I'll reach out to you. I am, as you know, Darren, I'm a busy guy. So
yes, I get it.
I can't do 50, 60 calls a day, and I'm a short attention span type of guy. So I wouldn't even be equipped to do that, but, it usually has to go a little bit through a little bit of a process for me to get engaged. But they're very responsive. If you have a property, you watch the video, you'll see how you can have all your properties that you're looking at underwritten. And you just upload it to our website. It's all confidential. So that side, in terms of here in another 2 weeks, we're going to be launching outside of Wainer Multifamily, the Leak Aware service offering to all customers. And there you would go to John@leakaware.com, and he'll get right back to you and explain to you the stuff. We'll have some video tutorials on it, and we will I'll probably meet with Darren here. I'd love to meet you if you're not afraid of getting the air disease. I don't fully buy into all of it, so
I'm not afraid. I am out and about, my friend. So we'd love to get together for a beer anytime,
man. Yeah, we'll get together for beer, and I can show you Leakware and how it works, and kind of go from there.
That'd be great. Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate your team. I appreciate the partnership and you guys helping our property execute on our business plan. I appreciate you coming on and sharing with others. And I look forward to working with you and your team more. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. And until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you. And please share the show with a friend.